everybody. How's it going? I'm back from the coast. I'm the host with the most from just back from the coast, Kyle Filson. And sitting across from me, the table from me, I can't speak.
Strokes.
Is Mr. Cameron Hale. How's it going, Cam?
Hey, I got a question for you, bro.
Yeah.
You going to Godzilla?
Yeah, we're going. What? What Ken's referring to is we're up here at Skeleton Studios, and I guess the wife and kids are in the other room speaking with Mary, and we heard a noise just from outside the studio, and we're like, I bet you it's usually Luke because he's the young one. He doesn't understand as much as the older ones.
Or he just doesn't care.
And we were like, hey, Luke, is that you? He's like, yeah. We're like, what do you want? I'm just making sure we're going to go see Godzilla tomorrow.
Y'all are ready? Y'all are ready? Yeah, we're ready.
We decided over dinner on, Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
Saturday, we had a baseball tournament in Burleson. Only a one-day one because Sunday, again, we got rained out.
Yeah.
But over dinner, we went to one of our favorite restaurants there in Burleson, Babe's Chicken. And we decided that night that we would all go together to watch Godzilla because everyone who listens to the show knows that Luke's a huge Godzilla fan. And
he lost his stuff right then.
Right. So he's going to be excited. So I think we're going to go do that tomorrow.
But, and that's been nonstop.
Ever since we made the plan at least six times a day. He's like, so Cam and CeCe and KK and everybody's going, right? Like, yeah, we're going on Tuesday.
We'll be there. Yeah.
We'll be there. So he's super excited. I saw where lots of people have already went and saw it.
Yeah.
I've been noticing on Instagram people taking pictures of going to see Godzilla. And I saw some of the reviews where people aren't that happy with it, but I'm like, you got to understand what it is.
It's a Godzilla movie.
Exactly. It's not going to be an Academy Award winning movie.
You're not going in there seeing Godzilla. If you're going in there looking to see Godzilla like The Color Purple, it's not going to happen. Quick heads up. It's a monster movie.
Well, for reference, if you think it's that bad, go ahead and watch a version of Godzilla from like 1960, because Luke watches them all the time. They are horrible.
Or just go watch The Meg.
Luke loved that. Every 20 seconds, there it is. Look, there it is, Cam. There it is. And we're like, yeah, we know. We're watching. It is. Yeah. So I'm not in charge of buying the movie tickets this time. Back to the episode where we talked about going to the Meg, I totally jacked that up.
Yeah, his rights have been revoked.
Which I'm happy with. See, sometimes that's what my wife doesn't know. I screw up on purpose so I don't get asked to do it anymore.
That's the best way. Yeah. For those wondering where we've all been, of course, most of you know, Kyle has been to the coast. And I went on a little camping excursion myself to the Black Sky area. And then, of course, all last week he was gone. And it was just it was just work. Yeah. And
summer
that's
vacation.
Just summer vacation, just doing our thing. So, yeah, that's where it's at. So now we're back. We got all kinds of shows coming now.
Well, I had a good time on my trip. I got a lot of sun. I
recorded a bunch of shows.
Sunburned. And we had a good old time, just relaxing. The weather was good. I know the weather wasn't so bad. It was worse here, but I had a good old time. But for you, you went camping and you had a terrible time.
It didn't turn out so good.
So why don't you fill everybody in?
Okay.
Everybody crack a beer or a soda pop or whatever you got and sit back and let Cam tell you
this
the debacle of his latest camping trip.
Yeah. It started out very, very promising. Like we left Friday and we drove up there and good trip. You know, we just took our time, eased up there, no big deal, and got in there.
Yeah, and you were out camping.
Yeah, that's right. And we got to the site. We set up. We were the only ones there. Now, what was the bad thing about the whole deal was this. As we were driving that way, we started driving into bad weather.
So the bad weather had already started.
It was just kind of stuck in that one spot. So as we were going, it's getting darker. We're like, oh, man. You know, and I'm like, no big deal. We're not going to let it ruin it. We're still going to go have a good time. We're going to make this work. So we get there and we get checked in. Neat little place. A Copper's Break it reminded me a lot of where I hunted in Seymour. So it's a lot of fun up there. And it's beautiful for stargazing. Like, we got to do a little bit of that Saturday morning about 1 or 1:30. But so we get there, we get checked in, we put up the tent, I get the tarp up, I get everything set up and squared away. We're good to go, unload it. And then we're like, let's go check out a few of the hiking trails. So we go and we do a couple of the hiking trails, and we're in there talking to a few of the park rangers, and we're having a great time. And we go and one's real simple and the other one's a little longer. One's about almost 2 miles, I think, that we did on one of them. So I think we ended up going like 3.5 miles or something, you know, on the one. So anyhow, so we jump on the one that's
but there wasn't a lot of other people there.
Dude, there was hardly anybody. Like,
so you're like, this is great.
Yeah. I was like, this is gonna be perfect, right? Nobody, you know, and I figured it would be booked all the way up. And then with the rain, it would hold people back. You know, they're like, yeah, we'll give it a day and see. So I was like, this is going to be perfect.
Because it was Memorial Day weekend,
yes,
right?
Yeah. And I think there's 50 campsites, including RV sites and all that. And they were online, all booked. Everything was booked up.
Right.
So we go and we do the hike and we do our thing, jump a mule deer. We see a little mule deer buck over there in Velvet. He's hanging out. You know, we're seeing a bunch of critters. It's great. We're having a good time. We do those two hikes. As we're headed back to our camp, we're driving back up because we stayed in the back part. As we're driving back towards our camp, raindrops start falling. I'm like, well, we better get there. As soon as we get to camp, get parked, run, we're headed to the tent, the bottom falls out.
Man, as soon as you got there, right?
As soon as we got back from the first hike. And this is like 6 o'clock that evening. And I mean, it comes down 6:30. It's just hammering. And it's not just the rain, but it's the wind. And then the lightning picks up. And then you're like, well, this is getting a little wild. And the tarps are popping around and the tents are waving, you know, and they're like, well, we're going to see what turns out. You know, I'm like, worst comes to worst. And we have to bail out of here and pack up in the rain. I'm out $36, you know, is all I'm out. That's it, you know, for two nights.
But it's not what you dreamed of. You're sitting there, oh, God, listen. Yeah. And you're like, hi. You can't hardly talk because it's so loud inside the tent. Yeah. And you're like, oh, this is great.
We couldn't hear crap. I mean, it was terrible. So we sat there for a little bit, wait about an hour and a half or so. Still rained. About 8 o'clock, it lightens up enough to where it's just sparse rainfall every now and then. And I jump out and get the stuff and get all the backpack stuff out, you know, and start cooking dinner. And I cook us
dinner. What were you cooking?
I took a bunch of we took stuff for dinner, like hot links and all this stuff. And then I brought stuff for breakfast. But then I also brought my backpacker pantry, you know, or my whatever it is. So that night we ended up having chicken fried rice cooked over my MSR because that was the jet boiler or whatever. Because
was
we
it pretty
go
good?
Outside. It was great. Yeah, their chicken fried rice is good. I enjoyed it.
Huh,
yeah.
Okay.
So we had that, and then we had some snacks in there with us. And so we're still just hanging out in the tent, just talking and laughing and all that stuff. Finally, it's dark. You know, I mean, it's getting good. So we're like, let's just go to bed. I mean, it's like almost 9:30. Like, what else are you going to do? I mean, it's just raining. You can't do anything. So we turn over and go to bed. And about 10:30, I hear some ruckus outside. Yeah, right? Something scratching around. I hear this ruckus, and this ruckus is the voices of 25-odd Boy Scouts, as loud as young, prepubescent, noisy, like 13-year-old and under boys could be, raising hell 20 yards from my campsite. 20 to 25 Boy Scouts, 10 to 12 adults, all back up in vehicles, pulling trailers, all load up after the thing had closed, I guess because they're Boy Scouts, they let them in and they come right to our spots where they had their camping sites behind us. And for the next hour and a half, they proceed to unload, set up camp, laugh, talk about which one of them farted in the truck on the way home, on the way to the campsite. Total madness. They're yelling at one another because somebody's not doing the work the other one's doing.
Meanwhile, they could have camped somewhere else. They picked the camp right next to you.
Us. Yeah. And it literally sounds like they're 10 foot outside of the tent. That's not the worst part. Then they're all walking around with flashlights, shining them on my tent from like 20 foot away. Oh man, there's a tent. Somebody's camping there. And that happened a dozen times. So I'm laying in there wide awake. Looks like I'm being abducted by aliens with the lights flashing around on the tent. I'm like, man. And my wife's like, go say something. I go, it's Memorial Day weekend. It's just a bunch of Boy Scouts.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I mean, it is what it is. We'll just, so finally, they calm down. We go back to bed. And then it's about, like, I think it's about 1 or 1:30.
Right.
I get up because I'm like, I've got to see if it's raining. I just, and it wasn't, you know. And by the time when they first got there, and as they were pitching their tents, the rain had stopped and it ended up blowing out after that. Like, it was a light rain, you know, just a few scattered drops now and then while they were sprinkling, while they were setting up, but it left. And so I got up, woke the wife up, and we stood outside for probably 30 minutes just stargazing out there because it is total darkness. You get to see so much more. And so we're looking at all of that, and it was cold. I mean, it got down cool. Like, it was in the maybe 60 or below up there after that storm had blown through. So it was really, really cool. It was nice sleeping.
Not 60 below zero, but
no,
60
no.
degrees or lower.
Yeah. Below, yeah, or something along those lines, yeah. For us, it was like 60 below when you're in the summertime. So it was amazing. And went to sleep. You know, back to sleep about one, you know, like I said, up and down.
The Boy Scouts finally went to bed.
The Boy Scouts had gone to bed. All was quiet on their front. And then at about 6:15, Reveille starts being played by a guy with a kazoo and another man with a trumpet. And they are walking around waking the Boy Scouts up like that 20 yards from my camp, blowing on horns, and then they're up, and the noise starts again like you're sleeping in the middle of a circus. And it would literally be like trying to take a nap in the middle of Chuck E. Cheese. That's what it would be like. It's just madness.
They're cooking breakfast and everything else.
They get that sorted out. They open up the trailers, drag all their gear out, start setting up, and they're cooking breakfast. My wife and I are up, and we're sitting there. And it's like 7, you know, by this time we're just sitting there talking. And I'm like, you know, they're going to be here till Monday.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I get out and she gets out and all this. You find out that they have got canoes and kayaks with them. So they're working on those badges and doing something else. And they're staying until Monday before they head home. And they were from, and I forgot which troop it was. Now, I don't even remember now, but from somewhere here in Texas, but I can't remember which one. But so they were staying until Monday the whole time. So I'm like,
you think when you booked your camping spot, they could have given you a heads up, like, just so you know, Troop 573 is going to be rolling in sometime tonight.
If not, they should.
And they're going to be camping right next to you. Yeah, because that would make a huge difference. Then you're like, well, no, I'm not even interested in even staying here then.
If I would have known how it would have
just
turned
got a
out,
hotel somewhere.
I wouldn't have gone.
Exactly.
It literally would have been one of those deals.
I think they should have given you a heads up.
Yeah. So we got up that morning, packed up everything, and I was back on the road, headed south to home by 8:30 that morning. Done. I mean, it was drive up there to hang out. And the other reason we didn't stay is they had to close the hiking trails because we got 3 inches of rain that night. And there was an 80% chance of rain coming in again. So I was like, dude, and I forgot to add that I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to kill wildlife in a state park.
Uh-oh. What were they doing?
They killed a rattlesnake.
They did?
20 yards from where we were camping.
That's not cool.
The rain had flushed them out.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Exactly. And I'm like, look, I understand the kids run it off, grab it, whatever you got to do to get rid of it. But call a park ranger, but I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to kill it. Well, one of them killed it. I don't know if it was the kids. I'm pretty sure it was one of the adults, and they ended up killing the rattlesnake.
I understand they don't want one of the children injured by the thing, but, you know, snakes do a lot of good.
Well, especially out there, it's not your call.
Right, exactly.
A state property. It's not your call on what goes down and what doesn't. Like I said, look, if you're scared, I get it. Just take a stick, mess with it, run it off. That's it. It's gone. No harm, no foul. Move on. You know, the whole deal. It's just one of those. It just ended up being a train wreck of an evening. So I came home, you know, slept good at my house, got up the next day, went and watched Brightburn.
How was that?
I enjoyed the hell out of it, man. We had a great time. I went and checked the movie out, the whole deal. I mean, had a really good Memorial Day, you know, break and the whole thing. It was fun, the whole deal. But, yeah, my camping trip kind of went sour. But, hey, still fun. Still had a good time. Never got wet.
Well, that's good. At least your tent worked well.
The tarp, the rain fly, I mean, everything. And it took that was the best test for the gear right then for that tent, and it worked perfectly.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah, it worked out really, really good.
There's nothing you could do at that point other than just kind of laugh and be like, well, this is the situation, right?
This is how it's going to be. Yeah. So. Almost fell down in front of my wife trying to, you know, every man, no matter how long you're married to your wife, if you've been married to her for 5 minutes or 50 years, you don't want your wife to lose faith in you. Right. You want to look like the husband that can do. Well, when you're climbing up some rocks and it's muddy and you're tired and you slip a little bit and bang your shin up real good enough to bruise and bleed like me. Yeah. It's hard not to look like a jackass in front of your wife. And then, of course, I never hear the end of that. But I'm like, yep, that's me.
Speaking of wives and being married, I want to know. I want to pick your brain about this. I'm sure this has happened to you, but I just want to know because it happened to me for the first time ever the other day. You ever run into somebody?
You can get pills for this now, Kyle.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Have you ever run into somebody and they start talking to you and trying to give you some knowledge about being married and what it takes about to get a marriage to work, whatever it is. And then you're like, well, how long have you been married? And then they're like, oh, like 7 years. And I'm like, that happened to me. Because most of the time, everybody I meet that's older than me, this fellow was older. He looked like he was in his 50s.
Yeah.
And he's telling me all this and what you need to do to have a good marriage and how him and his wife get it. I'm thinking, great, dude. So I just, you know, out of curiosity, I ask, and I'm expecting him to tell me something like
45
years.
Yeah,
he's like, oh, like 6 years. It's the first time ever. I'm like, well, I've been married for like 11 years.
Yeah.
I'm sure this happens to you a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Because you've been married for quite a while.
Yeah.
Depending on, I mean, particularly with your age. I bet that happens quite often with you. That's the first time it ever happened to me, and I thought it was really weird.
Funny.
This guy's telling me some knowledge. I'm trying to accept it. This old man's, you know, telling me some knowledge.
He's got wisdom.
And then I'm like, pfft.
You're like, dude, I've twice as long. Get out of here with that talk.
Yeah.
Just tell me why the first one didn't work. You know, that's the way you want to be like, look, I mean, I get what you're trying to help me out, but
Yeah.
Really giving somebody, look, don't give people marriage advice. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not a
cool
thing.
I just think it's awkward anybody gives any advice. Like, if you ask, that's cool.
Yeah.
Give it. But there's always people that are like pointing out
unless
how to
they're
do
telling
stuff.
You to be, unless it's advice like, don't drink that. That's bad milk.
Right.
Okay. Unless it's just blatant advice. But yeah.
I see it happen at the baseball field
quite
often.
But he didn't come
often.
Up and ask you.
No,
hey,
he just
you
like
some marital advice. You're like,
just thought
dude,
he would just tell me.
No. I don't need that.
You ever anybody try to tell you how to do your job? And you're
oh,
like,
dude,
what?
I get people try to. Apparently, I look like a complete idiot.
Well, there's no denying that.
Yeah, because I get people trying to tell me what to do all the time.
Yeah, I get it quite often too. And they'll be just like, oh, what was I doing? Oh, I was shooting photography at the baseball game with that lens I told you everybody that I rented.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome service. Borrowlenses.com. They're not paying for this or anything. I wanted to try out this lens that I can't afford.
Yeah.
And it turns out it did really good. What it showed me is that all these photographers I thought were really awesome, they're not that awesome. If you just get a really good piece of glass and some good software, you can do pretty good yourself.
You can be at about 80%
anyways. While I'm doing that, you would be surprised at all the people that walk up to you and try to tell you how to do it better or what you're doing wrong. And like, it happened at least 7 times, and I'm like,
but they're not carrying a camera.
I don't have any idea, but it's like I could instantly tell what they were telling me was like seemed kind of off. I'm like, why would you?
Yeah.
And then they try to one-up you. Oh, yeah, my cousin's got a lens like twice that size. I'm like, well, this isn't even mine. I rented it.
Yeah.
You know, they always got to – if you look like you have something impressive, they got to knock you down. And this is really prevalent with men. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I guess girls do it when it comes like if they have a particular handbag, then they're like, oh, yeah, look at that. I got a much better handbag than that. Oh, those are your shoes? Yeah, that's crap. I got a bunch better shoes. Yeah. The guys are really bad. Like, you can go to the archery range. You can go anywhere.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it's filled
trucks.
With one-uppers. Oh, yeah, the trucks, right? That's another thing.
One-uppers.
The world. I love nothing better than a good one-upper.
Yeah. I got one in my family.
Do you?
And I let them know about it.
Oh, do you? Or you just sit there and let them hang himself. That's what I like to do is let them spin their own tail, you know?
That's what I like to do. Is if you one-up me, I'm going to one-up you with something completely ridiculous and made up.
Yeah, like I can time travel.
Yeah, and then I'm just going to see how far you're willing to take it.
I can fly. Because
I'll hold you. We'll all go dancing. I don't care. I'll make up bullshit for days and days and days.
Right? You just throw out, oh, I can time travel to be like, what? Oh, is that what we're doing? I thought we were just making up stories.
When they tell you about, oh, I got this. I killed a man one time. Just like, wait, what? Yep. Back in my youth. Don't like to talk about it. Got in a fight over a goldfish. Killed him. Killed him dead. Just crazy shit. That makes no sense, but I'm with you in the same way.
Brightburn. I don't know anybody else that's seen it other than you, and you said it was really good.
I really enjoyed it. I think a lot of people, man, it's like we always laugh about. People seem to, when they want to come in and start hating, it's... Like, look, I don't go into it thinking it's going to be an Academy Award winning movie.
Sure.
It's going with the idea, but it's something that I like is I always like there was a comic series called Old Man Logan about Wolverine and all of the X-Men and the Hulk and all of this and Red Skull and all this in an alternate universe. And it's a very dark and sad whole plot line. So if you're a comic book fan, you probably already know, but if you're getting into comics or you like the X-Men, you haven't heard of Old Man Logan. It's, I guess you could, I don't know if it would be considered a comic book or a graphic novel, but either way, Old Man Logan is really awesome. And it's, they kind of stole some stuff when they made the movie Logan.
Right.
And so they kind of pulled some stuff out of that storyline to use. So I've always been a fan of the darker twists to some of our favorite characters. Like when, what was it in the DC, the Justice League or whatever movie, whenever Superman comes up, he's evil Superman for a little bit. Like I dig that because sometimes it's just fun to see what you hold dearest kind of turn a little sour. And that's the way this whole Brightburn thing is. Like if you take the story of Superman, but really put a dark, young boy, 12-year-old boy twist or 13-year-old boy twist to the darkness. Because you can relate to it, knowing what you were like as a young kid, and then you think about giving that unlimited power. Like when you wanted to rebel against your parents, that's one thing. But if you could rebel against your parents and there's nothing that anyone can fathom that could stop you, well, imagine the type of power would come over you, the ego that would consume
exactly.
you. Is because, and I don't mean just monetarily, like there's people out there that have all this money. I mean physically, like you can't kill me. You can't arrest me. What are you going to do? You try to grab me, I'm going to burn you with my eye beam, you know, my eye laser beams.
Like, get in your room, clean it up.
What are you going to do to me?
Yeah, what if I say no?
I'm faster than light. Like, I'm going to be around the planet I'll take you and just destroy you. I mean, and so that's kind of like the idea of you can see this good turn evil thing. The other thing I will say is it seems like they're laying out a series of movies to come where there's going to be more of these anti-hero type storylines, which is like I kind of like it. I kind of like that.
You said it was very dark.
It was. Yeah. It's not one that I guess you could take your kids to it. It's, you know, it's one of the, who is it? But it's one of those deals. Like, yeah. It's pretty gory. It's pretty, you know, graphic in a lot of parts of it.
Were there any 2 year olds in the theater with you?
No, I did not see any.
Don't you hate that?
Yeah.
I'm like, look, we all have kids. I understand. If you can't find a babysitter that night, how about you just don't go out that night?
When they're screaming and I'm trying to watch a movie too.
I mean, I've been to some movies where I'm like, I think...
it quiet or get it out.
It's a little inappropriate.
But yeah, it's a good film. I enjoyed it.
That's cool.
But like I said, I like that kind of dark... I don't know. Always the idea to me of the Avengers, if the roles had been flipped.
Right.
You know, and I just like the idea of that. It's like, those are the bad guys. These are the good guys. But it's also fun to be able to use the structure of a predetermined like DC universe, but not giving any of the names together. Like you look at Clark Kent. I mean, like the boy's name is like BB is whatever his name. I forgot what it is. But anyway, I mean, it's one of those, as you could see, like they kind of play off of it. So you're familiar with everything. But it makes a huge, and so that's, I don't know, it's just
I know you're supposed to suspend disbelief, but it does seem more realistic, because if something was to happen like that, they always show the superpowers, most people do it for good, right? When you gave that kind of power to people, there would be a lot of people that would use it for bad, I think. Like, if you were to give you that kind of power as a 13-year-old, yeah, you probably would have caused all kinds of trouble.
Yeah, oh, if you were to give me that power now, I might cause trouble.
Yeah, right?
But yeah, it's one of those things, so I hope that they continue with it. It's the same thing as, like, you've seen, and we had discussed it, Unbreakable, Split, and Glass, what M. Night Shyamalan did. I like those. They're different. It's a superhero-style movie, but it's different. It's a whole different take on it, and I don't know. I appreciate it. Just like The Watchmen.
I was just going to say, HBO is coming out with the new series, The Watchmen, so that's going to be pretty cool.
I love that kind of funky twist on it. So yeah, it was good. If you're down with that kind of stuff, I would suggest checking it out for sure.
Well, cool, man. I'm gonna have to do that. Let's get into some listener stories and some news stories in the paranormal realm. This first one was sent to us by a guy named John Garcia, and he says, "Howdy, Kyle and Cam. I've been listening to you guys since 2017. I discovered you guys while searching for another paranormal podcast, and I've been hooked ever since.
Thanks, man.
Whenever I recommend your show to other people, I always say it's just like Mysterious Universe, only these guys are from Texas. And as a fellow Texan myself, that praise carries weight. You guys do awesome work, and I wanted to submit some of my own stories to add to your collection. Now, this first story is from my father. During one particular summer, my father, which had been toiling out in the yard, had decided to come inside to get away from the heat and take a little break. He said he went into his bedroom and laid down on the mattress on his back, just looking up at the ceiling. After some time, just enjoying the silence and the warm buzz of my empty room, he heard the sound of paper rustling softly to his side. Thinking perhaps that it was a mouse, he turned his head very slowly, careful not to scare it away, and was startled to see a small humanoid figure rummaging through some newspaper that was near my parents' dresser. He said it was a little person and that it was dressed in dark brown rags. Now, my father recalled watching it for a few seconds in disbelief, and that was when the figure stopped dead in its tracks, as if it suddenly realized that it had been noticed. At that moment, he said, it turned quickly and walked through the wall, vanishing. As soon as it disappeared, he jumped up off the bed to search the spot where the figure had just occupied, even feeling at the wall where it had just gone through. But there was nothing there. If you've ever seen the film Cat's Eye, based off a collection of Stephen King stories, my father claims that the little person he saw closely resembled the little creature that was living in the little girl's room. I'm in my mid-30s, and to this day, he stands by what he saw. Thanks, John. That's a cool story. Now, Cam, I believe you were bringing up the story about Cat's Eye just on a recent episode, or maybe it was Elite, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But what about that? And once again, this fits so many descriptions when it comes to sightings of the fae folk or the little people. It's like, uh-oh, he can see me.
Yeah, like they just got noticed.
He's not supposed to be able to see me, and they always run off. I think that is so interesting that for whatever reason, when people notice them, it's like, uh-oh, we got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I love stories like that. He says this second story is to piggyback off the first one. This also took place when I was a child, so this is kind of a story within a story. Now, my family owns property we mainly use for hunting. It's on the edge of town where I grew up, and apart from the acre we've cleared out to feed deer, the rest is all just thick brush. When I was little, my father bought the property off of another family member, and once in a while, we were negotiating prices, etc., he heard a strange story from the buyer's grandfather. Now, the old man had grown up in the area and used to love talking about his boyhood adventures on that particular property. All innocent stories, except one time. The old man related that a strange incident that happened to him one early morning when he was very, very small. A large creek used to run through the property. Today, it's nothing more than a dried-out ravine, but when the old man was a child, it was full, and it had fish in it. The old man said that one early morning, he had come out to the property with the intention of doing some fishing. As he approached the creek, he was startled to hear hushed voices. Creeping quietly to see who it might be, he said he found himself looking at two small people standing by the water's edge. The figures appeared to be no bigger than a foot tall and were dressed in dark green and brown clothing. The voices that he had heard belonged to these two people, and although he couldn't tell what they were talking about, he remembered feeling that it was something serious. Then he remembers one of them whistled like a bird, and to his astonishment, the whole group of these beings clambered out of a dead nearby fallen tree. The old man said he watched as they gathered and walked in file down the bank, disappearing where the creek bent and went in another direction. Now, of course, when he got up to find them, there was no trace of them. The old man told my father that he had tried going early again, several times, hoping, just hoping to see them again, but he never did. John, those are both really interesting stories, and please continue to send stuff like that in. I love those sightings. And this is another thing that we've talked about. Cam, I think you did a whole episode on little people.
Mm-hmm. Multiple times.
It's one of my hunters and stuff like that. But this is a common thing, right? They're always little. They're always, well, of course, they're little people. They're always dressed in like green or brown for whatever reason. They always seem to be like gathering firewood or walking single file.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I love the stories. And in so many cases, the people aren't terrified. They're actually excited, and like this old man claims that he'd been going back for years hoping to see him, and he never did.
Try to catch him again, yeah.
I mean, we've talked about that, too. That's one of those counters that I would like to have an encounter like that. Like, if I had to pick a paranormal encounter of any kind, I think it would be the Fae.
Yeah.
Or the little people.
Yeah.
I love that story.
There's just something about him, like we've discussed and we've covered. Is it just, I don't know. I think it's because we both love nature so much that it's one of those, it's like... I don't know why. I don't know why the Bigfoot thing. Although I'd love to see one, I think the idea of seeing the little, of course, it might be terrifying.
It could be, I guess.
Well, it would be different if you didn't know anything about them. Everything looks lovely. Like if you didn't know a polar bear was going to eat you,
right,
it's the first, true. It would look beautiful. So it's one of those deals. Like the first thing that's going to cross your mind is don't drink anything. Don't eat anything. I better not get too close to this thing. And am I still in my reality? Like, is this the Oz effect? Did I slide into something? Like, so maybe it is better to see Bigfoot and leave that alone.
I think you did a story one time where they had like a little bow or a little spear or a little knife. Yeah. I mean, I love that. Yeah. And these are different.
They look like small Native Americans.
That's what I'm going to say. These are different than the sightings of like Dwendy or trolls or gnomes. That's not what this is. This sounds more like the little hunters, like you're talking about. These look like little people.
The Indian in the cupboard is what I always think about. Just a little bit bigger, but something along those lines. Yeah.
And I wonder if that story was inspired by some of this folklore.
Maybe it was.
Or maybe it's not folklore.
Yeah, true.
I mean, there's all those sightings where you talk to like elderly folks on these reservations and they all believe it. Like, oh yeah, that happened.
I would love to like be glassing over an area like out, you know, in the deserts or something like that and see
how cool would that be?
Like see three or four little hunters that were like 12 inches tall.
I'd want to help them, right? Like, is there anything y'all need?
Yeah,
right? God, help y'all out, something? You know.
But how? Oh, that would be so wild.
Kill a cottontail rabbit and feed them for like 3 months.
You're right, you don't want to like swap off like, I
just
got
get some beef
here.
Jerky. Stop yeah. at Bucky's. I could get one of those venison and pork sausages. Feed the whole village. Them, right? Yeah. You're like, cost me $6. No
me,
problem.
Hit me up when you need some more.
Get a nothing bunt cake. I mean, that'd be like, you could have a whole wedding.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, I think it would just be fun to see. Be involved in that.
Yeah, that was really cool stories. Thanks, John. You said you had some more of these flying birds.
I got the big bird stuff again.
Are these thunderbirds or these pterodactyls?
Probably there seems a little to bit be the of
two,
both.
Two camps, right?
Yeah.
One is
yeah.
giant and looks just like a giant eagle. The other one yep. looks like a freaking pterodactyl.
Well, we've got, there's a lot of flying stuff going on here. Now, this is, here's one, it's a little quick when it comes back. That there was a couple of girls were attacked in San Jose, California, back in like the late 60s, early 70s, so 69 or 70. Says this here. It says the guy, and this is what Lon, the guy KB had sent this to Lon. It says that the guy that said he was picked up and carried.
Oh, geez.
You remember that story
yeah,
where the guy said he was grabbed by one back? I believe it was in Illinois whenever it went down. But yeah, here it says, yeah, in 77, back in Illinois. He says, I believe it. KB says something, or this is, yeah. KB says, something like that happened to me and a girl named Ida around 1969 or 1970 back in San Jose, California. We were walking across the street in front of her house when a huge black bird, just like the bird described in the Lawndale incident, came swooping down the hill at the end of the street and straight at us. And it tried to grab us. I remember shrieking when it missed us. I remember the whole street getting dark as it flew over. I also had bad dreams about it afterwards, and I remember telling my parents about this and that they didn't believe me and told me just to quit making up stories.
Right.
And I have always remembered it very vividly. It scared the holy hell right out of me.
I believe it.
So this isn't one of those outliers of a giant black bird just that one time grabbed the dude and took off. So we're having other people's like, hey, look, we saw some things like that, you know, the same deal. Now, then there was a giant bat-like creature they said that was in the Midlands back in June in 2009. It says, I witnessed a large bat-like creature with a wingspan of at least 15 feet and with a body at least 4 foot long. Now, I heard it before I saw it, and I could see the membranes of the wings. And what this person writes is, Wayne writes, as it in like it was inflating as the wings pushed down, so you could see
right,
it catch
yeah,
the air.
Yeah.
Said I could see all of that. Says it was all black, and everything that I could make out about it was flying level of my bedroom window 30 foot away. Says I've never seen anything like that before, and I've never seen anything like that since then.
Now, how do you explain that? That's my favorite thing about these sightings. Is why, first of all, why are there so many of them?
Yes.
Number two, what could they be seeing? Because, I mean, we'd be finding bones if these things were physical.
Or nests or something. We would find some sort of physical remains to it, yeah.
I think it's a lot like the sightings of the little people. I think for whatever reason, they're somehow crossing over.
That's the only way that we can explain it. Like you think back to, like cyclic time, that instead of it being linear as we perceive it,
right,
and it's stacked like records.
Maybe
and
it's
each
a ghost.
Record spins at a different speed. And every now and then, like we say, you kind of get it to bleed over or blend together.
Yeah, I mean, if your Aunt Gladys dies and you see her ghost, why couldn't you see the ghost of a pterodactyl that once roamed that canyon?
Yeah.
Right?
It would make sense.
Yeah,
but why would it interact with you? You know, that's the other thing. It's like it chases them down and grabs people. Like a ghost don't pick people up.
Yeah, no, that sounds more like physical. That's definitely physical.
Which is really still strange.
But a lot of the things with the flying is they never see it flapping its wings. It's like a static image, which I think is odd.
And when we talk about like all the flying humanoids, the same thing. It's like
same
it's
thing.
Not like their wings are flapping and they're sitting up there like angels watching people. It just soars by like it's been thrown like a paper airplane.
Yeah, and in some cases, people claim to hear the flapping of the wings.
Yes.
So I wonder if that's just part of your brain, like filling that in, or if that's the problem,
question.
Right?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I don't know, man, but there seems to be a lot of those sightings.
So get a load of this. Keith up in New Jersey sends this in. It says this. This sighting happened this past Friday, May 24th of 2019, Memorial Day weekend. It was around noon, and my family and I were driving to our extended family's lake house on Lake Wallenpaupack in Pennsylvania. Go ahead and send those messages in. I ain't reading them. It was a sunny, clear day, and we were heading west along Highway 6. This long stretch is heavily wooded and rural on both sides. And that instance, we were driving through the state game lands number 180. Before I go on any further, when I told you and I was trying to mispronounce stuff and I was trying to get it right and it wasn't working, I said, I know I'm going to get a bunch of emails about it.
Yeah.
I did.
Oh, I
got a bunch of emails about it.
I think it's hilarious.
Look, I'll try better next time.
Okay,
so here we go. So the state game lands number 180. I was driving, so my eyes were fixed upon the road ahead. There was another car roughly 50 feet in front of us. Then, from the left side of the road, I saw something emerge from the treetops and fly across the road right in front of the other car. So I would say it was about 60 or 70 feet from my point of view. I got a very good look at it as it crossed in the air, and it had all the features of a bird, except this animal was gigantic. I'm aware and have seen all the different types of birds in the area, the largest ones being bald eagles, hawks, and vultures. I'm also y'all need to send me some information on how to pronounce familiar. I'm also very familiar with all the different types of water birds.
Think of that movie where it's like
roads.
And they're like the.
Yeah.
The.
Yeah. I love it. I'm also very familiar with all the different types of water birds, and this did not resemble a water bird whatsoever. The profile of the flying animal was as long as the car in front of me was wide. So what is that, 5 feet?
At least.
Right? So and so they've got something good in the foreground, all right? It says, was at a minimum of 6 feet. So that's what they're saying here. So the other car quickly braked as it flew past them, obviously astonished by the sight as well. The animal flew over the road and disappeared into the thick forest on the right side of the road. My wife, who was in the passenger seat, saw it clearly as well and said aloud, "Wow, what's that?" What we saw was evidently a bird, but an unusually massive one.
So this is, sounds more like the Thunderbird camp.
Yes. Now, there's another post right underneath that here, written by a fellow named Hassan. Now, get a load of this. It's not a giant bird, but me and my younger brother saw a huge dragonfly spanning well over a foot and a half long in Bolton, England in 2002. It must have been over an inch in diameter as well as at the center. I would have questioned myself, but as it was witnessed by someone else too, I'm pretty sure it wasn't just me seeing things.
Now, this is interesting because, you know, we should do a whole episode on this. This is not the first time I've heard of people seeing these unusually huge insects.
Oh, yeah. Now, he writes here that sometimes I think it was an RC helicopter, but no way could it move with such swiftness, agility, and silence, especially with the 2002 technology. I went to the Manchester Museum and checked with the insect experts, and they said it sounds like you've seen something from the prehistoric and that no species of dragonfly that exists today are that large. Has anyone ever seen these massive dragonflies? I would love some confirmation, some more witnesses across the world. Cheers.
Wow. Yeah. Well, to answer, I don't have them right on hand, but yes, to answer the question, yes, I've heard of other stories where, just like you were saying, something that was from a Fargo era,
yeah,
perhaps in prehistoric times, where just much like the pterodactyls, people are seeing these ginormous insects. I've also heard of people on safari or in the deep jungles of the Amazon back in the late 19th century or so, and they came across, you know, incredibly large insects, like an ant the size of like a Rottweiler, you know, or I don't know, a butterfly, you know, the size of a kite. I mean, just crazy stuff. And it makes you wonder.
Could you imagine seeing something along those lines? Like, I can't even imagine bumbling across something
in England. I wouldn't buy it. But like, if you told me that in Papua New Guinea somebody saw something like that, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
That's true.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know why that makes sense, but oh man, that, I love those kind of stories.
Well, and it doesn't, I mean, there's been a bunch of pterodactyl sightings in New York and Pennsylvania and Maryland. Like, it's all up in that area, like we had talked about. So this isn't one of those deals. it's wild that, like, that area, like, what is it about that area? Is there a bunch of cave systems that we don't know about? I mean, like, you would think everybody's pretty much seen what they need to see up in that area.
Yeah, it would make sense, though.
I mean, what are we talking about in New York? The Adirondacks?
Adirondack Mountains, yeah.
Is there any kind of crazy little cave system that might be, harboring a giant terror? Okay, well, here we go. I'll tell you this right here. Here's your story. It says, my wife has told me a story of when she was backpacking around 1988 in the Adirondacks of upstate New York. She said she saw a large flying animal over a small lake. She estimated that it had a 20-foot wingspan, but the weirdest thing was that she said it didn't look like a bird, but rather a featherless reptile like a pterodactyl. It wasn't just gliding around. She said it was beating its wings and was surprisingly very fast. Now, she isn't the kind of woman to make these things up either. She's very honest. She also said that she wasn't scared of it, but more like in awe of how large it was.
Wow.
So there we go. She's seen one. There's another one here. It says, I saw this bird in the 70s. I said to my friend Sherry Ann, look, it's a pterodactyl. That was after the fact. Because of the fear, I was speechless. This was so large, it flew low over me, about 10 foot or so above me. All these years, I knew it wasn't normal, but I was around 10. I guess it was nighttime, and we were camping on the water, walking out onto a pier. Now, I live in Maryland, and I can't really remember, but I believe we were on the eastern shore. And that bird could have picked me up like I was a cat. It was as large as a small plane, a Cessna perhaps. But I'll tell you, it wasn't a vulture or eagle or anything like that, or of this time.
Wow.
So it even sounds more like that. There's another one from the 70s. It says, when I was 8 years old in 73, one evening, my two brothers and I were playing in our backyard in Limeport, Pennsylvania. And I heard the sound of flapping wings. So I looked up, and there it was, a giant pterodactyl flying just above us over the tops of the trees. And I said, look at that, as I pointed up, and my brothers looked up at it. And when we took off running into the house, and that's where it says, that's where it stands. That was it. All three of them. So him and his two brothers saw it. Then another one says, I never told anyone, for I figured they would think I was crazy, but delivering morning newspaper in Scarsdale, New York in the late spring of 1962 or 63, it was 5:30 in the morning. And I heard a screech, a very loud screech come down out of the clouds. And then a huge bird-like creature floated by. It looked like one of those pterodactyls. I've never forgotten it, and I've never told anyone about it. Wow. I just don't know what it is.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's multiple crazy big bird sightings that's been going down, and more people are like, oh, yeah, I saw that thing. And so, but it's not like it's recent, like we had discussed. This is from 60s and 70s all the way up until now. Like, it's hit or miss, and it seems to be a flap, you know, with not being a pun, but it does seem to be
right,
like we did the flap with the Mothman.
Man,
like,
that's...
It seems, and why is it in those areas like that?
Man.
It's crazy, right?
It makes
no sense, but it is awesome.
It is awesome.
Anything flying, I don't know what it is, but I'm like, I would just feel like more people would see it.
You would think so.
Yeah, you would think that when they're flying by, more people would get an eye on it. But I guess no.
Yeah, while you were doing that story, I was looking at some giant insects information. And actually, Nick Redfern wrote several stories about these.
Rick Redfern?
Yeah, he's a friend of Nick Redfern. There was actually a creature known as the Meganeura monnii. They said it was a dragonfly who had a wingspan of 3 feet, and they found fossilized records of that that lived in the United States, Canada, and Scotland. So this was a real thing. They found fossilized remains of this. Also, check this out. They said in Ohio in 2001, Nick points out that they found a centipede that was 5 feet long.
Whoa.
Not living. This was the fossilized record of it. It had once lived. And it goes on and on. And they said in a German quarry, they discovered something that was about an 8 foot long scorpion. I mean, like, so these insects were at a giant scale hundreds of thousands, millions of years ago, but they did exist. So I wonder again, if when that person saw that dragonfly, assuming it wasn't a drone or an RC plane or helicopter or something like that, that maybe they were seeing somehow, like you were talking about, cyclical things. Like, it was a replay for a moment. They were seeing something that once existed in that spot that no longer does. And why that happens, I have no idea.
I think there's a lot to that. Yeah.
We're going to have to do some more research.
Yeah, we got to look at more episode on insects. That's crazy.
We got another listener story here. This comes from somebody called Jesus Lover, or I'm going to just say Jesus Lover, because I think maybe they just like people named Jesus.
All right.
But Jesus Lover writes this, Cam. He says, I stumbled onto your podcast while searching for any similar stories to an experience I had when I was a young kid. Now, I've stopped telling my story years ago for a couple of reasons. First, it makes me sound like a terrible person. And second, people don't ever look at me the same. It took place back in the early 1990s. I forget exactly how old I was when this happened, but I remember loving the X-Men and Vanilla Ice, and I think Whitney Houston was being played on the radio 6 times an hour every hour.
I want to dance with somebody.
Yeah, given I was born in the early 80s, I would say I was about 13 years old at the time. It was summer vacation. And my only friend that I managed to stay in contact with over the summer months was a kid that had a little bit of a learning disability. Maybe he was perhaps autistic or somewhere in the spectrum, I'm not sure. Anyways, he was a nice kid and lived a half mile from me. Our mothers had been friends since we were both born, and thus we became friends by proxy. Even though he was a little slow, we still enjoyed the weather and riding our bikes and exploring the nearby woods. Back then, you know, times were different. You could take off exploring in the morning and not come back until the late afternoon for dinner, and nobody would worry that you were gone or kidnapped or something had happened to you. Well, one bright, hot day, I pedaled down to his house. The plan was to ride down to his grandparents' house, take a swim, and ride around their farm. There were lots of hills and tractor paths that could keep us busy for hours. We would often tie papers to the back of our bikes with long strings and then chase each other, trying to ride over the other person's paper. It was our version of dogfighting, like in Top Gun. Well, we were playing this game, me chasing my buddy down a hill. The bottom of the hill was a safe zone where you could come in for a landing, when I spotted something in the taller grass beside the rustic wooden fence. I stopped quickly and dumped my bike to take a look. I thought maybe it was a deer carcass. Maybe even a buck. We came across plenty of those over the years and always sawed their antlers off. As I approached, I got a sick feeling. Certainly, there was a body there. It was still, and flies were buzzing everywhere. But it wasn't a deer. It was becoming more and more obvious that it was a human body, and I was terrified. It's terrible to say, but I was more afraid of having to call for help and possibly getting in trouble. For what I have no idea. But finding a dead body is always a big downer, I'm sure. I thought about pretending I didn't see it. But if I had already called to my buddy, he had already noticed me looking at it, and he was already there. That was before I knew it was dead. And I didn't know it was a dead guy. I knew we had to do something. Like maybe try to help. I was not going to do mouth to mouth. I got close enough to take in the man and found to my horror that it was not exactly a normal person. It was a small man. His torso was the size of a 6-year-old child's. He was completely naked. His arms and legs appeared to have been amputated because he only had stumps left. His genitals looked strange, and he was definitely male. His head was large and abnormal. It looked like a pale pumpkin in December when they are all soft and you don't want to pick them up because you're afraid your fingers are going to poke right on through. If I were to guess, I would say that the guy was 100 years old, wrinkled and stretched and frail. My great-grandfather had Alzheimer's, and I remember visiting him near the end, and he had that same brokenness to him. There were flies all over him, but he didn't stink. It reminded me of those old Sally Struthers commercials with the starving African kids with flies landing on their faces, and they didn't even blink. What the heck, I thought. My friend got a stick to poke him with it. I got close, and in a last-ditch effort to avoid the hassle of having to tell the authorities, I asked firmly, "Sir, are you all right?" I was absolutely astonished to see that he opened his big, nasty eyes and blinked a few times. This was too much for me and my friend, who ran back to our bikes and down the hill. His eyes were large and unhuman. His pupils were enormous, and his irises took up what was left of the socket and wear the color of an old rusty truck after it rains. They also had that milky haze to it, like a dog on its last leg. I asked him again if he was all right, and he looked right at me and scowled. He scrunched up his face and said, "I don't know if I'm okay. I only know the future." He said this in a tone that seemed to indicate he thought my question was absurd, as if there were no reason whatsoever for me to think that he may not be okay. His voice was eerily similar to that giant turtle in the Neverending Story. It was slow and croaky. I had just about had enough. I was relieved that I didn't have to call the police to report a dead body, but I wanted to get the heck out of there before he did die, which seemed like any minute now. I wasn't aware of it, but I was backing up. The last thing I remember was him saying, "Even your future." I was on my bike and flying away soon after. Later, we were breathless and high on adrenaline. We thought it best never to tell anyone in case we got in trouble for not helping a guy who was so obviously in distress. For weeks afterwards, we were sure that any day now, he would be on the news, or we would overhear our mothers talking about the body found down on the Henderson farm. We discussed it between ourselves for years, always referring to him as a man, but I don't know I was ever fully convinced of its humanity. Could it have been an alien? Could it have been a fairy? A goblin? A messed up amputated human from who knows where? Nothing sounds right. Anyway, I have never heard of anything like this, but it helps listening to your fantastic show, knowing that I'm not the only one who thinks this world is all sorts of crazy things. Thank you so much, Jesus lover. So what do you make of that?
I think it's like a little dirty fae.
I don't know.
Like a goblin. That's kind of what it sounds like.
When he mentions its arms and legs being amputated, it didn't. When I read the story, I don't think immediately, like it wasn't gushing blood. Like he just looks like somebody in the past had them removed.
Yeah.
Or perhaps he was born without them. But what was he doing in a field? And when he was talked to, he just kind of like woke up and said, he knows the future, even yours.
And he looked awful.
Horrible.
Like, what is he, just legless, homeless, armless?
But he said the guy was little. Like his chest was the size of like a six-year-old.
Dude, that would be disturbing as hell.
What?
Man, no.
That is a creepy one, right?
Yeah, negative, sir. I'd have done the same thing. I'd been like, I'm out. I'm out.
Yeah, his friend, Hall Butt, before he could even hear him speaking. But
because that's how bad things happen to you. You start talking to somebody like that, next thing you know.
I start thinking of like
in the back
house
of a van.
House of 10,000 Corpses, like the way all those family members looked weird.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's what my mind goes to. I don't know. He should send that story to Rob Zombie because I think that sounds like a good part of a movie,
dude,
right?
That would be a great Rob Zombie film.
Yeah. You ever seen the movie Basket Case?
Probably not, no.
It's not the best movie, but there's like a little head with arms on it and it attacks people. I don't know. Luke's found it. And
I still like Quato. Remember, we always talk about him on Total Recall. That's the best.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Well, that's a pretty cool story. If you have any other stories out there, folks, that you would like to send me and Cam, send them in, man. ExpandedPerspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828. We appreciate that. Cam, you got any other stories for today?
No, I'm good like that. I've got several coming up, though, for the elite stuff. I've got some crazy stories of, let's just put it this way. John Wilkes Booth, maybe he didn't die. Maybe he was just like Adolf Hitler. Maybe he slipped out. And not only did he slip out, but he slipped out down close to here. So I've got that one coming up. I've got some stuff about a Border Patrol agent, some of the wild stuff he's seen.
Oh,
I've got some cool stuff.
You're talking about illegal immigrants. You're talking about paranormal.
Yeah, some wild. Yeah. So, yeah, it's the whole thing of. Yeah, so it's. I've got some cool stories coming up here. The next couple episodes on Elite's going to be pretty wild. So
that's cool, man. I hope everybody out there has a good week at work. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.